it's time for today's episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast, recorded in front of a slightly tipsy studio audience at world-famous Champions Fried Chicken. We will have the latest on Georgia Bulldogs football, basketball, and recruiting. Watch live and send us your questions on the 11 Alive Sports page on Facebook. Be advised, this podcast is off the record and not safe for work. Also, be sure to subscribe to the UGA Sports Live Podcast on iTunes and Google Play.
And here we are again, episode 503 for UGA Sports Live. I'm Paul Meharry alongside Jake Roos and Dave McMahon. Guys, first two episodes, we previewed G-Day, we previewed recruiting, we previewed Rivals Camp, we previewed everything. Well, this week, luckily, we get to talk about it afterwards. We got to see everything. We get to see the finished product. We got to see G-Day. We got to see Rivals Camp. We got to see the recruits at G-Day. So, Dave McMahon, I know you're excited.
Yeah, I'm excited, but I want to point out one thing when you said, oh, we saw a finished product here. I don't consider what we saw at G-Day a finished product.
Oh, like, no, I just meant we actually got to see the game.
Okay.
That part is okay,
because a lot of the people, when I saw some stuff on the dog vent earlier this week and saying, oh, if that was what we performed in offense and defense, I see us finishing third in the SEC East. I have a feeling if this is what we saw in offense defense, I have a feeling that Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel will be a little bit more part of that offense if that's what we saw. So don't worry if that's what we saw. I mean, that's part of what we saw, but I think the offense will be a lot better than what we saw Saturday.
Jake, well, initial thoughts from you, my man.
I was hoping for overreaction Monday.
I do have some stuff.
And
I have it.
And I got it, and it was glorious because just like people – just like I thought people would last week, I wanted to see Jake Fromm come out there and do it well, really pour some gas on this fire, and boy, did he ever. It was great. It was wonderful to watch. It was so much fun. I get that fans may not have – loved the quarterback controversy. I guess it's boiling right now. I don't think there's much of one, but it was fun to see Fromm come out there.
Oh, yeah, indeed. And, guys, let's just jump right into it. G-Day. The big thing for me going out there was I wanted to see if the offensive line could hold up. Dave?
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it?
No, the offensive line, and that's not going to be the offensive line we're going to see, per se, once the fall starts. And probably by the middle of summer, it's going to be completely different, especially with all the offensive line talent we're getting for the summer. But
let me play devil's advocate quick. We've got plenty of time.
Sure.
So you're telling me that you're going to put your blind faith into a couple true freshmen once they get on campus?
I want to see if
That's what you just told me, right?
You know what? Why not?
Okay.
I do not think game one – it's going to be Wynn, Allen, Galliard, Kinley, and Sims. I don't think left or right, that's not going to be our thing.
And you're okay with putting blind faith into freshmen that haven't even stepped on campus yet?
What about Hayes? He's not a freshman.
He can't make the first team right now.
Right now he couldn't, but what about by the middle of the summer?
Okay.
And then start the fall.
I mean, I told you, I'm just playing devil's advocate right now.
You're fine.
Okay, thank you.
If Hayes moves into like a role either at left tackle or right tackle, maybe that moves Wynn to more of a guard role. Maybe Wynn moves to the right side or left side. We never know. But I mean, as of right now, that first team was Wynn, Allen, Galliard, Kinley, and Sims, and I don't think that's what we're gonna see.
I think that the coaches really like Isaiah Wynn at left tackle. They've really been talking about him right there, Jake. Is that being his kind of home?
Yeah.
I don't think that would be his best position to put him out there. But the coaches really seem to enjoy having him at left tackle. I think that once they get those bigger boys, we saw Isaiah Wilson on the sidelines, Jake, before the game, and he was wearing a Toon Squad jersey. So if you're not familiar with that, that's from Space Jam, the Monstars.
Oh, okay.
No, he had a Taz jersey on.
Yes, but
his
it was the Monstars.
No, oh, it was Toon Squad, which was Taz, but he looked like a Monstar,
yes,
which is
yes,
why
okay,
I could
okay,
see
okay,
you
yes, I got
making that mistake.
Yeah, he looked like a Monstar out there. Like,
he did.
He was – by far bigger than any human that was on
so
the field.
So you're saying he's even bigger than what the last time you saw him?
Yeah, I mean, he's massive.
It's ridiculous, man.
It's unreal.
The kid is, he's something special to look at from a physical standpoint. And, you know, like you guys were talking about, I mean, the offensive line, I had high hopes. I will say I don't put it all on the offensive line. I think Jacob Eason held onto the ball a little bit too long several times, which is something that he's been, you know, knocked on for in the past, and you saw that kind of carry over into G-Day. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned this idea of Isaiah Wynn at left tackle, and, you know, is he going to be able to do that? Is that his best position? I'll tell you this. I think that it is his best position for Georgia. And what I mean by that is Greg Pike's best position overall in his career was probably guard, but he had to step into a right tackle role. Mm-hmm. I think that that may be the case that you've got with Isaiah Wynn right now. I think he is their best option at left tackle. I think ultimately his best position is going to end up being guard at the next level, and I do expect fully that he's going to play at the next level. But it's going to you know, I think that he is Georgia's best option there this year. I think that his skill set, I think his experience, I think the things that he's able to do just in terms of managing that line and kind of being the captain of that unit, I think you can't discount those things. And so that's why I think that that Wynn's going to lock that down, even going into the fall.
I think one thing that I saw with the offensive line that I did like, I do like Lamont Galliard at center. I think he's very cerebral. I think that that's kind of his position. I don't think there's going to be a controversy at center.
Okay.
So if anything, you've got one guy locked down at one position, Dave.
And in a position that you expect him to play.
Yeah, and I would like for him to be there throughout fall camp and just don't mess with it, you know, and I think that's where he should be. Let's move on to, like Jake said, kind of in the show open. We don't really have show opens anymore. We're just doing a straight podcast.
We're just going for it.
Before we go to that, though, we are at Champions Fried Chicken on Baxter Street like we always are every Tuesday.
Yeah. And hey, speaking of Champions, you say Isaiah Wilson's big now. Can you imagine what he's going to be like after eating here a few meals?
They need to hold him out.
I don't think Josh Collins, the owner of Champions, would. I think he would actually love to have Isaiah Wilson here because
he's selling
a lot of food to that man.
Just make sure you come before he eats here because
the crawfish on Fridays is gone.
Yeah, yeah, no question.
He's going to eat everything in sight.
But Jacob Eason, Jake Fromm, I wrote about the grades. And, you know, it added a little fuel to the fire. I will say this before we get on a Jake Roos recruiting rampage about how much he loves Jake Fromm. Jake Fromm was going up against second and third string guys.
And a
lot of walk-ons. He made Tim Hill the walk-on, bless his heart. Probably not want to play football anymore because he was beating him pretty bad.
Yeah.
That guy gave it his all, but.
He did. Jeremiah Holloman was. Yeah.
We talked about Holloman too.
Yeah, I'll give you credit for that.
But
you're not going to give me credit for Fromm?
Fromm looked good. There's no
Fromm
question
looked
about
very good.
There was a couple throws that he made that even if it was against first team defense, he still would have looked phenomenal. I would have liked to see, just so that we wouldn't have to talk about this so much because I know you want to, I would have liked to see Kirby Smart just throw him in with the first string just for like two series. Just so. If he can do it, all right, man. We got a QB controversy. We're getting hits. This Facebook Live is blowing up.
So next year we should have two G days. One with Fromm on the first team offense. One with Eason on the front.
Yeah, just do it every Saturday.
Every Saturday for the rest of the summer.
But that's my take on it. Fromm looked amazing. I think he looked great. He looked at home. He looked comfortable. He looked more comfortable than Eason did at times. Eason looked a little choppy to me, to be quite honest. But at the same time. Fromm's going up against a couple walk-ons in the secondary, you know, a couple true freshmen. He's ahead of the curve, no question about it.
Yeah.
He's ahead of where Eason was at this point last year.
Yes.
Yes.
But I think I don't think you have a QB controversy.
No, I don't think so either. And I know people want to. Create that, and it's fun to talk about. I mean, here in the doldrums of the spring and the anticipation, I don't think there's a QB controversy because, really, what you wanted to see out of Jacob Eason, in my opinion, is exactly what you got. And yes, he held the ball too long at times. Yes, he took a couple of sacks that were probably unnecessary. However, you did see more consistency from those downfield throws. You saw him starting to build that rapport with some of these guys. Terry Godwin, he hit Charlie Warner on that fantastic touchdown score that Warner was
Charlie
able to
Warner
push.
Charlie Warner ran over three men.
Charlie Warner.
They're still stuck in the ground on Sanford Stadium
I don't
right
think
now.
Anybody could have in Sanford could
Charlie
have stopped
Warner
him.
Had one catch, but it was like a great, great, great catch. And but he did so much more throughout the things. I mean, we'll get more of Warner throughout today and throughout the rest of the time he's here at Georgia. But I mean, I did
catch. That was that flash where Kirby Smart was like, Warner's doing some stuff that you guys haven't seen yet. There it was, guys.
Yeah.
And Georgia's tight ends this year. We'll get to that. But I want Jake to continue finish on his Fromm. on his Fromm rant.
Oh boy, it was fun. It was fun to watch. And one of the things I'll say too is you had a situation with Fromm that I think a lot of people have not talked about, but I do think is important in this situation, and that's that Jake and Jeremiah Holloman, who we saw hook up pretty frequently, are two guys who are very familiar with each other. They played together, in various camps. They played at the Army All-American game together. These are two guys that are not unfamiliar with each other's game.
Jeremiah Holloman did his commitment video at Fromm's house.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Meanwhile, you've got Eason, who came in last year and was sort of just learning a lot of these guys for the first time. Isaac Nauta.
Sure.
You know, I mean, he had that connection there, but you know, you had an established receiver with Fromm, a couple of guys who knew each other's tendencies. So
absolutely.
I think that matters a lot in that hookup. Now, that's not for me to discredit either one of them. I think that what Jake Fromm showed were the things that we know about Jake Fromm, the things that we've always seen from Jake Fromm. He's got that quick release. He can look off a guy. He can hit that spot. I mean, his anticipation is always what sort of put him ahead of the curve. And like you said, he is there right now. I think I had the chance to talk to DeAndre Hill, and the story will be up on UGASports.com tomorrow. But he said, you know, the thing about it is, and it's exactly what Georgia fans should be hoping for, was that Fromm is pushing Eason.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he's going to beat him out, but he is making him be the best Eason he can be. When a kid like that comes onto campus and electrifies the fan base and he's spending that kind of time watching film and he's making these connections with these receivers, that's forcing that guy ahead of him who was equally touted coming out of high school to sort of rise to the occasion. And I think that that's one of the biggest things about Fromm. I loved what I saw from both quarterbacks. I know most people probably weren't as high on Eason, and I get why, but I think that the steps that we saw from him, he was throwing the deep ball a little bit better. His throws weren't as wobbly. He was a little bit more consistent in some of that stuff. You want to see that progression. Those were some of the things he struggled with last year. He's got a whole summer to work on it. He's got fall camp to work on it. There's more time for Jacob Eason to progress, and I think that you're seeing it inch by inch. You're watching, in my mind, a quarterback grow up in real time.
I did see. I mean, I agree with you for the most part, but I do see Eason did make some of those same mistakes. Not as many of his mistakes. I think he did make some progressions from last year, but he did make some mistakes. And he's like the short to medium range passes. He still isn't on the same page completely with those guys. They're not reading things. But I did think he was 16 for 36 passing, which everyone's gonna say how horrible it was. But it looks like he had a different. He had a different playbook. There are a different set of plays to run. It looks like they wanted to throw more deep and go out more. And for the most part, he was not horrible in those deep passes. Some of them, yes, but not all those.
Here's where I'm coming in on that. Kirby Smart mentioned in the post-game press conference, and this factors in huge. Georgia structured that game so pass-heavy.
Yeah.
So defenses knew what was coming. I mean, the first-team defense – knew that they were going to pass. I mean, there wasn't a lot of turnaround and handed to Nick Chubb or Sony Michel.
There was one carry between two.
Correct, exactly.
About 3 or 4 touches and one carry,
so,
exactly.
You know, I think that that's really a key factor here. I mean, if SEC defenses knew that you were going to pass every down, they'd probably defend you a lot differently.
Correct.
I mean, I think Eason did well given the circumstances that he was dictated with. I think that what he had to deal with, he made the most of it. Like you said, 16 of
36
is not great, but
he improved in some areas.
He improved
on those deep balls. Like, he was probably like 50% on those deep balls, and last year he was probably like 20-30% on those deep balls.
Absolutely.
So I think he was a lot better than that.
I've got some comments, guys, rolling in on Facebook I want to get to. Rick Martin makes a great point about what you said about Fromm and Holloman. He says, Eason should be just as familiar with any receiver on the team as much as Fromm is with Holloman.
Yeah, that's
he
true.
Should be more.
That's true. I agree with that.
Godwin looked really good. Wims did, had a few catches. We did not see Ridley out there. So, I mean, it was like those were the main three that he connected with last year. So, I mean, two out of three, he connected very well on those.
In my opinion, though, too, we saw what we've known about those guys for the longest time. And really, it's always what gave both of them, I think, their five-star status in the end. Eason has that incredible gun. I mean, he's got the howitzer. He can sling it a mile. It's Matt Stafford-esque, you know, with the power.
Sure.
Jake Fromm, on the other hand, has that lightning quick release.
That's that Aaron Murray.
Exactly. Looks so that's like what Murray. That's what you're dealing with. You know, it's that toss up. Now, are either of those guys going to be as good? I don't know. That's a tall order, of course, for any quarterback to have to deal with. But I think that having those two guys, you saw exactly what we already knew, I guess, about them and their games.
I think one big thing, and we'll go on to a different topic, guys. George is in a good spot at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
Inarguably.
I mean, and you know, and to see 2 5 stars do what they did on the field, George is going to be in good hands regardless of whichever situation they decide to go in.
If one of them struggles, the other one should be able to pick it up.
Yeah, no question.
And
should.
If anything comes out of this and Eason is still a starter, Eason's going to have to work his ass off to continue to be the starter because Fromm's going to be pushing him every day.
Which I love.
If you're a fan of Georgia football,
there's no better scenario.
Exactly. So don't worry.
Yeah.
You know, the quarterback position's fine.
Kirby Smart talks about it a lot when they're practicing first defense versus first offense. Good on good.
Yeah.
That's what you've got in your quarterback room. You've got a couple of guys that any program in America would love to have in their room, and they're pushing each other, and they're pushing those buttons. Do I think that Jake Fromm is going to continue to do that? No question in my mind. Would it surprise me if he supplanted Jacob Eason at some point? I'm not saying this year, but maybe year three or with some experience under his belt. That wouldn't surprise me. I'm just being honest when I say that because I think that the things he brings to the table lend themselves better to the college game maybe than Eason. You know, I think Eason has that incredible NFL arm. He's got that like I said, the howitzer. Fromm is able to do that quick decision, that fast-paced offense, and that's what he's been doing his whole career. He's been doing it against high-level Georgia talent, which matters also. I think he's been playing better talent his entire career than Eason did in Washington. And, you know, those things, that matters.
Yeah, I think it does. And you know, it's up in the air. And I think one thing Georgia fans do want is to see Fromm redshirted.
They would have more years out of the two.
I don't see it's going to happen.
But
let's
move over
to the defense, though, guys.
Okay.
Because first team defense, okay.
Strong.
Yeah. Strong. Yeah. Second team defense, yeah. It's the second team defense.
Yeah.
And we'll go ahead and start with the first team defense. I think that the defensive line, and this is kind of probably where Dave came with seeing the bad offensive line. Defensive line was really good.
That front seven was
they didn't have Trent Thompson,
and that's what did to me. Like that's the thing you're missing probably
your two best players on defense.
Yeah,
yeah.
You're missing
on the front
probably
line
your two
and
most
the,
capable
and the
defenders.
Yeah,
you know a guy who's very likely I think to be a first round NFL pick.
Thompson.
And then a guy who's going to play himself into the league and probably have a
He'll
long career there,
pick, yeah.
but and probably play forever.
I
mean, guys like Roquan seem to last with what he's able to do.
But I love that seven.
Yeah, it looked great, and
no offense, but they're going to be even playing in another year. I mean, or two or
yeah,
something. These guys are so young and so energetic and so powerful and so fast. I'm excited about that front seven. I mean, I loved how like Ledbetter played. I loved how like Rochester was getting in there. I mean, those guys were. I mean, Bellamy got a sack. Carter got a sack. I mean, we had a lot. Natrez looked good also. I mean, so all these players, and there's a couple freshmen too that would shine as well.
Yeah, and I think once you get those other guys in, the Nate McBrides of the world come in summer, it's just going to push these guys even more because they're high quality players too. So the first team defense for Georgia, without question, I think we all can agree. Probably going to be one of the top in the SEC. If everything plays out, Trenton comes back.
Not a lot of excuses not to be.
There's not. I mean, the only excuse would be maybe the secondary, but you got Dom Sanders back there who everybody kind of acts like, you know, it's just kind of a fluke each year what he does. the guy can ball, man. I mean, this is the bottom line.
Yeah, yeah. I think Dom Sanders is going to make himself a lot of money in the NFL because he's – that kid, to me, is the most ball-aware of anybody in that secondary. That's a guy – Aaron Davis is your – in my opinion, your heart and soul. He's the guy – you know, he rose from those walk-on ranks and he came up and he's performed so fantastically. Dom Sanders seems to know where the ball's going almost every play, and he's there.
And that's the reason why he's in the top 10 list in career interceptions. He's only four away from being tied for number one.
Exactly. So he's got a shot. He's got a very realistic shot.
He's a safety.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say you touched on the first team, and they've been great. You know, you saw Dom Sanders, you saw Aaron Davis, those guys get involved. Where you've really got some concerns, and Kirby touched on this in the post-game presser, and I definitely think it's true, the idea that without Mecole Hardman back there, you don't have a second-string scholarship defensive back playing corner. You know, they had Tim Hill out there, and like we said, all props to Tim Hill.
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
He could beat me. Yeah, the three of us. Pretty bad.
He would beat me like a redheaded stepchild, no question about it. But he's
no Mecole.
He's not. And the thing about it is, this is where you've got to trust that the coaches' evaluations are going to pay off, because it looks like you're going to be in a situation very, very quickly where a freshman's going to be slotted into that second team defense. You know, right off the bat, a guy like maybe Amir Speed, who knows? I mean, hopefully it's a guy like Amir Speed. I think because of his size and his physicality, he brings a little something different to the table. But you brought in seven defensive backs for this reason. You had to have a solution there. It looks like Mecole is going to land on offense. I think that all signs are pointing that
way.
People have asked about that, and I think that looks like where things are headed. If I had to choose it right now, I'd say he's going to stay there. But that's not to the advantage of the defense. I mean, they need some help. They need it fast. They need a guy who can come in, step in game one, and be ready to step in. Because, I mean, defensive back is an area where you're going to get rotated in. If you're a second-string defensive back, you better be ready to play, because you're going to play.
I think one guy that we all can agree on showed out, and we knew he was going to, Richard LeCount.
Yeah, nine tackles.
Both teams in tackles with nine, and seemed like every play he was in on for that second team defense, whether it was and he's not the biggest guy. He doesn't really look intimidating out there. He's not like, you know, one of these guys in the secondary like D. Gibbs.
Sure.
He looks like a NFL corner right now. Richard, he has put on the weight. He looks swole, but it's just he's kind of a tiny figure. That's just how his body is. He's hitting folks, though, man.
He's a crazy person. That's the big advantage, and that's really what you want out of that position. He is a guy who will – I mean, he'd throw himself into a wall if it meant that he could win a game.
Yep.
He was the heart and soul of the recruiting class, and it's not going to surprise me to see him over the course of his career morph into the heart and soul of that secondary.
Oh, the heart and soul of this Georgia football team will be his by his
I think so.
Middle of
I
the
think
sophomore
so.
Year.
I think
It'll so. Be LeCount's team. And, you know, there's the sky is the ceiling for him, no question about it. So,
all right, G-Day,
hold on. I've got my overreactions.
Okay,
go ahead, Dave.
I'm not a huge fan of how Blankenship did. I'm not worried about it. Well, you know what? You finished 4 out of 6 in field goals, missed that extra point, but 4 out of 6, he missed the 2 that are 40 and above. A lot of times it's going to be 40 and above. Hopefully David Marvin comes in and I think especially on the long kicks. The short kicks I'm okay with Blankenship, but the long kicks put Marvin in there.
All right, I've got a couple quick hitters right quick. Overreaction Monday.
Okay.
Prather Hudson's going to win the Heisman this year.
Yeah.
45 yards, trucking guys left and right. No need for Nick Chubb and Sony Michelle anymore. They might as well just sit on
the bench. Well, Prather, if you remember, he was in high school also on the wrestling team, also on the baseball team and the track team. So he's a pretty well-rounded athlete.
Yeah. He is.
My other point was I guess it's time for Jacob Eason to head back up to Washington and start working in real estate because Jake Fromm just took over the starting job at quarterback.
Well, Jake from State Fromm should be the one that was selling real estate and stuff like that.
And, you know, some folks will say that it was just a scrimmage, but Fromm showed up and showed out inside Sanford Stadium, and that's where the Bulldogs will be playing 6 of their games this year, so it all translates, right? No? Okay.
Yeah. We talked about why. My last point, why and why not. Yeah.
The wide receivers for Georgia might as well have the nameplates Moss, Rice, and Harrison because they all look like future Hall of Famers out there on Saturday. Oh, Kirby Smart said this was the best they looked all spring. That can't be true because they were catching everything thrown their way.
Yeah. Well, the first couple minutes, they weren't.
No, yeah.
First couple minutes, you're like, oh, no, is this going to happen again?
I saw Tyler Simmons, you know, fumble, and then he dropped a couple of them, and I'm like, oh, man. And then he just turned it on.
Hey, and Jason Stanley. One of the first catches he's made in Sanford Stadium.
Well, he had zero catches.
I think that is maybe the first catch he's ever made in Sanford Stadium.
Jason Stanford. I can find that out, but yeah. I don't know.
It's close.
By the end of summer, I don't think they'll be in the rotation that much.
All right.
Let's go on to recruiting.
Yeah, let's move on to recruiting. If you're not following the breaking news, we are here to give you some. You may not like it, but that's not our problem. I'm sorry. Yeah. Britton Cox, four-star Rivals 250 player out of Stockbridge, committed to Ohio State tonight, did so on Twitter. Big blow to the Bulldogs, and especially to this 2018 class. A lot of people very concerned about this 2018 class. I get it. And to this point, I had said maybe don't push the panic button. Now is probably an okay time to start hitting the panic button because you lost Adam Anderson, four-star outside linebacker out of Rome High School on Saturday prior to G-Day. Went down to LSU. Anderson, his teammate Jaquan Griffin, and also Jamarcus Chapman also committed to LSU. The three of them decided that was going to happen. Anderson flips his commitment. Georgia comes back Saturday evening, maybe not with the news people wanted, but something I don't think should be underrated, with the commitment of the number one kicker in America, Jake Marta. I understand why people – I know that doesn't take the sting off of losing a four-star outside linebacker, but – listen, as Dave said, people are concerned about, you know, with Blankenship and the punting game. This kid is an excellent punter. He's a guy who can play that field position game for you. Cox was a guy that it was really up in the air, kind of up until even this evening. I mean, it was going for to lose a guy like that of his caliber in state. Devastating. There's no other way to put it.
You said lose a guy, and yes, it's very well likely that we lost the guy, and Georgia will not have him. But how many flips were there last year? And we are so far away from February. How many flips happened between April 25th of last year to signing day?
Sure.
So anything could happen. I mean, I don't expect like all five or six of the top 10 guys to flip the other way around, but. I expect maybe like one of them or two of them, and hopefully even more than that to flip.
Okay, well, here's a stat for you guys. 10 out of the top 17 guys for Rivals in the state of Georgia committed elsewhere.
Yeah. And I'll go ahead and tell you, Dylan Wanham is not somebody I see in Georgia's class at this moment. J.J. Peterson's definitely a toss-up. Zakobe McClain is not coming to Georgia. Quinn Williams has been up recently. Still doesn't have an offer from the Bulldogs.
Christian
Armstrong's not coming.
Ezard's maybe.
Matt Hill doesn't have an offer. So you've got a situation right now where it is looking a little bit dire in state. And we have been harping on this, like I said, for two or three weeks. Don't get worried about – you know, Georgia's recruiting until they start losing these in-state guys. I know it's April. I know that it's early. However, a guy of Britton Cox's stature, of his caliber, of his talent, what he brings to your team, that's a guy who, in my opinion, was probably very close on the line of being able to play a role similar to that of John Ledbetter. You know, he's got that same sort of build. He's got that ability to crash the edge like that. Britton Cox is a major loss. There's no other way to slice it. I'm the panic button. It's okay to push it.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Folks are saying on the chat, saying, James Crump says, not concerned. Panic button should be pushed in September if we still only have two commits. Mick Strickland says, Kirby and staff will make a big push in the weeks to come. Problems is fans want it now. Guys, I understand where you're coming from, and yes, they might be able to get commits in the coming weeks. Yes, it's more than likely Georgia, the University of Georgia, will get commits. The problem is you now have top prospects going elsewhere. So you're picking out of a smaller group.
Now, the only thing I can tell you that can provide some sort of salve to all of this, and I talked to Josh Collins about this, the owner of Champions Chicken, earlier today.
Mm.
The one thing you can take some sort of solace in all of this is the fact that at least these guys aren't committing to Bama or LSU.
I don't know if you can take solace in that.
Here's the thing. You're not going to have to face him. That would be so much worse if you were going. I mean, if these guys were going, if Britton Cox had gone to Auburn, that's so far worse. It's like Derrick Brown. You know, I mean, you're talking about a situation where it's not great. It's not ideal, and it's not even close to ideal. But if you don't have to face him, that's the best you can hope for if they commit elsewhere.
Do you remember a guy, Raekwon McMillan?
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he went to Ohio State. He from Liberty County.
That worked out all right for him.
You know, and that's what's playing back in my head. The last guy that went up there and
you think that the head coach of Ohio State knows something about like Southern recruiting?
It seems like that, doesn't it?
Gosh. It's messy. I mean, guys, it's fine if you don't want to hit the panic button. We're just kind of letting you know you can push it if you want to.
Now are they looking better in outer state, some of these outer state guys, some of these top tier guys,
okay, but
from some outer state ones?
I see what you're saying, but
I'm not saying though.
Okay, let's say they were to get to Zamir White. Let's say they were to get Trey Hill, and let's say they were to get Jamari Salyer. That's still only three guys.
Yeah,
I mean, and yes, it would look great, and all this talk would probably diminish. But at the same time, you still have a full recruiting class to get.
In my opinion, it shouldn't diminish because. Yes, you get Zamir White, incredible player. You get Jamari and DeAndre Hill, exceptional offensive lineman, top of the line.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, as good as you could expect. You have still not addressed your biggest need over the last three classes, which is the defensive line.
Yep.
Britton Cox is a guy who could have helped you toward that end. You know, a guy like Robert Cooper out of South Gwinnett, who's committed to Florida State, another guy who could help you to that end. You're talking about a very difficult situation.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the talent's not totally in-state for the defensive line. You're going to have to dip out. You knew that early on. But a guy like Britton Cox really takes some of that pressure off for how many guys you're going to have to go out and get. It's going to be a little bit of a tough going, I think.
Yeah, and the thing is, like I said earlier, yes, Georgia's still going to get recruits. There's no question about that. That's not why we're saying hit the panic button. It's just the top-tier recruits. That's how you build championships. You get Britton Cox. You get Emory Jones or Trevor Lawrence. You get, you know, the list could go on and on. You get Derek Allen at defensive back. You know, you get Miles Sims at defensive back. You get Mescal on the edge defensive end. That's how you build. Those guys are in your backyard, and now they're going away. That's why you would hit the panic button.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, so.
And, you know, I Jonathan Hampton, thanks for tuning in, first off, but makes the point, and it's something that I've been saying pretty much ad nauseum for the last few months. Recruits want to see how Georgia does this year. They want to see, does this team turn a page? Because, I'll tell you, if it's Georgia of old, that's not that exciting. That's you're going to end up with those – you know, maybe top 10, 8, 9, 10 classes, you know, guys who are contributors, maybe great players, even spotty.
Sure.
But you're not going to have those program-defining classes. Now, if Georgia comes out and really makes a run at this SEC East, if Georgia comes out maybe and crushes the SEC Championship, you know, we're talking about a lot of hypothetical there. That switches up things huge because – the second most important thing, in my opinion, that you can sell to recruits, and really not even second, I guess it's first, is winning. Guys
are winning attitude.
Guys will come in if you can win. Alabama's shown it. Clemson's showing it now. If you win and you produce consistently, guys want that. And it's the only thing that you can rival with that, in my opinion, is playing time.
Yeah, early playing time.
And Georgia doesn't have that to sell anymore, so they've got to win. And that's where it really comes down in this class. They need a leader. Somebody pointed that out earlier. I believe it was Jeff Fulford said, you know, this class needs a leader. That's true. They need a guy to come
Britton
in.
Cox
Britton Cox could have been that guy. He has that personality. He has that ability. He is that well-liked. He's that well-known in state. He could have led the charge for you. Now, in my opinion, you're back to square one. And I will say, I'm going to tell you guys first, not first. I've already said this on the dog on the vault over at UGASports.com. I think that realistically, if I were to look at your board right now, I would expect Jake Camarda to be part of this class. I'm not expecting Donovan Georges to be part.
Yeah, and to kind of rehash this all again and put it in a broader perspective, we got a question from Daniel Knox. Thanks for tuning in. He says, is there a quality control issue? He says, Georges seems to be late to the party, seems to be inconsistent with contact. What gives? I mean, that is a huge question. Because
it is.
Because it seems like every time we go to one of these camps, Jake, and you were at Rivals Camp Atlanta this past weekend, seems like we talk to a top prospect, whether it be A.J. Terrell or somebody else.
J.C. Horn mentioned it this past weekend.
And it happens at every camp that we go to. Yeah, I'm interested in Georgia, but they're just not showing the love. They're not in constant contact with me. It seems like they're here one week and not there the next. And, you know, and to piggyback off that, if you can't sell Brenton Cox to come be the leader of his home state's college, to be the leader for the recruiting class in 2018, what's going on?
Yeah, right.
You know, it's one of those things where you got to kind of shake it, you know, and shake the baby. Hey, what are you doing? Quit crying.
Don't shake the baby.
Yeah, but you see what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Is it a quality control thing? Are the coaches not on the same page? Are they thinking that Jake Roos is contacting them, but I'm thinking that Dave's contacting them, so I don't call them?
Is
that what it is?
In my opinion, right now, with this year's class, I think the problem personally is too many irons in the fire. I think that you have too many offers out. I think you've got too many offers out to people across the nation. That you've got, I mean, you know, I said it with Max Ray. You had Max Ray committed, and I think the circumstances of his decommitment didn't necessarily hinge around this, but they at least had to give him some pause. The idea that you kept pursuing other offensive tackles. Like, why are you doing that if this is your guy?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand the strategy.
Have done that in the past? Though?
I don't get paid millions of dollars to recruit kids, so I guess that's probably apropos that I don't understand the strategy, but I don't understand what George is doing. Clemson, meanwhile, last year we saw they knew they were going to take a small class. They didn't offer that many kids, and what they did was they offered a group of kids and really, really went all in with them. Georgia seems to be casting a wide net, and it's almost to a point at this stage where you can't satisfy all those kids.
You can't. And James Crump says, Georgia wins the East, recruiting will skyrocket, and we'll have more flips than hot games.
Winning
can I play devil's advocate right quick? Florida's won it twice. They haven't had hot cakes flipping.
You're right. Yeah. No. I mean, that's a good point.
I understand where he's coming from. And yeah, you might get a couple flips out of that. But Florida, they've won it twice, and they're not like, oh, we won the East. Well, here they come.
Yep.
Come on back, boys.
You're right.
You know, it's extremely baffling to me, and it sounds like there's too many irons in the fire to go after too many guys. And the coaching staff just isn't on the same page on how they're contacting these kids. It seems like it's an inconsistent thing.
Yeah,
and
it does.
And it's been like that for a while.
It has. And, you know, you were lucky, I think, last year.
You were very lucky last year.
You were lucky last year because so many in-state guys jumped aboard by this time. I mean, the first 2 weeks after G-Day were haymakers. I mean, those were – you had William Poole. You had Natori Johnson. I mean – Trey Blunt, I believe, was not that far after that. You had guys coming into the fold very soon thereafter.
That's because you had a new coach, you had a new environment, everything was fresh. We're bringing our guys in.
And then what did Georgia do? They went 8-5. They weren't in contention for the East early, and it felt familiar to kids. It was, you know, same old Georgia. Like I said, I do think Georgia has the resources, the town, the programs, the academics to sell to really boost this thing beyond that.
And an indoor practice facility.
And the indoor practice, yeah. But it's all about the W's at this point.
At this point, that's what it's got to come down to. And I think Georgia can do it. It's going to be an extremely hard uphill battle. Brenton Cox was going to be kind of the cog to this class to kind of get it to roll, I thought. He's now committed to Ohio State, and – we're watching the world.
Hopefully by January, and then hopefully by February.
The world's burning right now.
Well, hopefully by January and then February, we say something that he's committed to a different school. I mean, like I said, it's a long ways.
Well, and I will say, Brenton Cox, a kid, I don't expect this to be done. The first call he received after he committed, I'm sure, was from Kirby Smart or somebody on that staff. They reached out to him. I guarantee you, long way to go until December for this kid, a guy who was pretty torn between two schools. Won't surprise me to see him mix it up a little bit. Hey, Ohio State definitely has its charms. I can see why he chose it. We talked about it on Sunday. He said, the tradition is what sold me on Ohio State. And they've got great tradition there. There's no doubt about it. But he mentioned the idea of staying home, repping his own state. There's still a lot to celebrate.
We're a long ways away.
So don't hang it out just yet.
Long ways away, but boy.
It's hurting right now.
Ooh. Yeah.
No hotcakes.
All right. Speaking of recruiting, and maybe I almost hate to turn the page onto this because it's a little bit it's a lot unfortunate.
Yeah.
The 2017 class signed obviously back in February. One of the big members of that, Deontay Demery, four-star offensive lineman out of Brunswick, a kid that when I've talked to people about this, not an immediate contributor in my mind, guy who, if I had to pick the guy most likely to redshirt out of the offensive line group, it would have been Demery. And so to see him make that decision and decide to kind of push it off, to see him let go from the class, I guess, is really not that devastating in the football sense. But it's a tragic story all around. There's really no winners here.
It's a very
here.
Serious topic, and it's a very serious situation, and something had to be done, and it was done.
For those of you who don't know, we'll catch you up. Yeah. Deontay Demery arrested after G-Day Saturday night downtown near the Waffle House in downtown for a domestic abuse, domestic assault charge. There was apparently an altercation. With a girlfriend
who has a child with him.
Yeah, who has a child with him. 1-month-old
child.
I don't know. It's hard for me to talk about personally because I knew the guy.
Yeah.
I met Deontay several times. I talked to him on G-Day. He was on the sideline.
Yeah. Looked great.
He looked great.
Yeah.
And you could tell that he had been in the lab. He had been in the weight room. He had been working on – this was a kid who very early on in his career – you could see the raw talent there. Didn't have the body for it. Had not worked himself into it. We saw him on Saturday. He looked like an SEC caliber offensive lineman.
Yep.
I mean, he had really changed the whole structure of his body. He had redistributed 305 pounds across that frame in a very appealing
he
way.
He looked like a defensive tackle.
He did. He did.
Defensive end. Yeah.
Like I said, it's tough for me. Knowing the kid, his mother passed away.
He's got two kids.
Last year, he's got two kids. He's 19 years old. His father was never really in the picture. I don't want anyone
Correct.
To think that I'm
Correct.
Excusing
Correct.
Anything he did. What I do hope for this young man is that he's able to take the situation and make the best possible thing out of it. Find a mentor. Find somebody who can help you. Take it on as a man. Realize that probably, if you're 19 years old, you got two kids, you've got not a lot of family around you. One of the best ways that you can help you and your whole situation is a great college education and maybe even challenging for the league at some point. And that's so far in the distance. Who knows? Go and make a better man of yourself at the next level. Tragic all around. I really do feel for the guy. Like I said, I don't know your thoughts.
Yeah, at the same point with that, like Jake said, I've known Demery. We've known him for 3 years now, and always been extremely respectful to us. But at the same token, there's no place for domestic mm-hmm. violence anywhere in the world, whether it be football or anything. It's not acceptable. For that to happen and knowing his background, I think that's what what frustrates me a little bit is that people are just kind of judging him just based solely on this, which, like I said, there's no place for it anywhere. But you feel for him because of what he's gone through in the last 18, 24 months of his life, him being able to go to Georgia and really try to start something for his family. And not only that, this wasn't just a girlfriend. This is the mother of his child. His child's going to grow up. We're in a day and age where the internet's extremely prevalent. He's going to read about it one day. The child will. You know, it's a life-altering decision that was made in a split second downtown Athens.
That's what happens.
And, you know, that's exactly what happens. And I wish him the best. I really do. And not only do I wish him the best, I wish his girlfriend the best. I hope that whatever this is, they can get through it together if necessary. If not, to not get through it together if necessary. I think definitely needs help. But at the same token, you know, you can't bring that into your football program and expect to kind of sweep it under the rug or do your own punishment with it to where it's an alcohol or a drug abuse type thing. This is a little different.
While it's different, it's like you said, it's incredibly serious, incredibly, like you said, mentors. And I don't think it's just him that needs mentoring. And obviously, I think it's something that they should do together-wise, like him and his girlfriend together-wise, to learn how to deal with situations that arise. I mean, yes, never do what he did, but you have to learn together how to deal with things.
Yeah. If you're going to continue that relationship, there's no doubt about that in my mind. And, you know, like I said, I was devastated at the news. I found out Sunday morning at Rivals Camp, and really it just weighed heavily on me all day and continues to do so. This was a kid who I'd met several times. It was a gentle giant. I mean, a kid that you didn't necessarily expect something like this would happen. And we don't know the ins and outs of these young men's situations. We know them primarily from a football standpoint. I like to think I get to know them a little bit better than that. Not something I would have ever expected out of Deontay. But it is what it is. And it's, like I said, it's unfortunate all around. He's got to learn to become a better man, and hopefully he'll grow from this. That's the only thing that you can hope for at this point.
Yeah, it's just a really sad situation overall. I feel for everybody involved, and that's pretty much the end of the story with that. You know, and hopefully it's not the end of
his
Deontay
story.
Demery's story, though.
I hope not.
Because I told Jake we were out there on the field at G-Day, and he walked by, shook our hand, just all smiles. I think his girlfriend was with him. And I looked at Jake and I said, I'm rooting for that kid.
Sure.
Because of the circumstances that he's been through, you know, and some of those he's put himself in with the children. But at the same token, you know, his mother passed away and all of that. So it's
tough. It's hard. It's hard for me to write off anybody who's 19 years old. You've got a lot of life left.
Yep.
Hopefully that he knows that too.
Yeah. So we will jump into we've got a few more minutes left on this
just
podcast.
A couple.
Yeah, so we'll jump into Dave's topic, and I don't know if Dave has a topic.
I don't really have. Okay, I'll just catch up everybody on a lot of little things on Georgia
sports.
That
sounds great.
Yeah. I'm interested for all those who want to talk about women's sports. So Georgia fired a gymnastics coach this week.
Yeah, what's Dan
I don't
Durant follow
thing.
That.
I mean, so. Basically they made it to the semifinals in gymnastics. Basically what you do on the Friday of that final round is this 12 team compete, six in the early and six late, top three in each advance. They were not part of that. They were the 12 teams that advanced to out there, they were the dead last in that. And they haven't, ever since Suzanne Yocklin left years ago, they haven't been able to really exceed at that level. They've always been fifth or sixth, either to make the Super Six or 11th or 12th that far. And basically, in my opinion, there's a big difference right now of the top four or so teams and everybody else, and they're nowhere near the top four teams. I mean,
which is not the expectation.
Which is not what Georgia was.
Correct.
I mean, Georgia is the most successful gymnastics program of all time, and they are nowhere near competing for a title.
Let's go back to something. What about the baseball and basketball coaches?
Same thing.
So you fired the gymnastics coach.
Yeah, same thing.
Are the expectations not the same?
I say, here's my difference with, and I know a lot of people are like pro Fox or anti Fox and pro Strickland, anti Strickland. With Fox right now, I think what the issue is, we are basically, I don't think we're as bad as everybody sees it, but we're not good. We are just staying the same level, and that's an issue. I mean, obviously, we'll get better and better and better every year.
Yes,
and
the program is like stagnant. It's stale.
But we're not bad.
It's like how Mark. It's just like how Mark Richt was.
Yes,
though.
Exactly.
Just stagnant.
And that's why I think a lot of people want to get rid of them. Baseball wise, it's going down. Baseball. I mean, right now, it is going to the ninth inning. Right now, Georgia is leading Georgia Tech 6-3. I'm very happy about that. Georgia beat Georgia Tech earlier this year, and then the next game after this, when they play Georgia Tech, will be the one at SunTrust Park. So that's going to be really exciting, but. It's just not enough wins. Georgia is looking really bad in a lot of baseball games. Yes, they're starting a lot of true freshmen on both hitting-wise and on the mound-wise. But, I mean, it's too much. They've had losing records every year with Strickland, and this is the worst of all the records.
I'm not going to lie to you.
So I think this is the year that he has to be let go.
I love baseball. I'm a high school umpire. I can't follow Georgia baseball. Yeah. They're the fourth or fifth best team in the state of Georgia.
Georgia Tech's struggling this year too.
Yeah, but
I'm excited about the program, but
you're
this is the year that Strickland has to go.
State of Georgia talent wise with baseball, I could bring in 40 kids right now that would field a better team than that.
Correct.
And they'd all be freshmen.
Correct.
it's what it is, man. I mean that's what I.
Greg McGarrity, get this man on the line. Get Paul Meharry on the line.
And then he could hire me.
Hey, be my statistician.
There you go.
There you go.
All right, guys. Well, I think we've about wrapped it up. Jake, are you ready to roll?
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, man. Dave, you ready to roll?
Yeah, why not?
All right, guys,
but I'm going to eat some Champy's Chicken before I go out, though.
And don't forget, guys, Fridays here at Champy's Chicken, crawfish boil starts at 5 p.m. Get here Tuesdays. Trivia before we come on the air. Dave McMahon is the host for that. And this wraps it up for episode 503 of UGA Sports Live. I'm Paul Meharry. For Dave McMahon and Jake Roos.
And our camera person.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
That's it for this episode of the UGA Sports Live Podcast. Tune in next week for more Georgia Bulldogs news and notes from Athens.